The Roto Swim Tracking Bungle, the Perth Lord Mayor snubbed, and an iconic WA beach named third best in the world. It's Thursday, March the 2nd.
The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.
G'day, Matty.
G'day, mate. Happy Friday Eve.
Friday Eve. We're nearly there. And now let's talk about the Roto Swim. So it happened on the weekend. It was fantastic. Hundreds and hundreds of people made the crossing over to Roto. There were no sharks. Pretty much perfect, right? Although now we're hearing that maybe it wasn't quite so perfect.
Yes. The Roto Swim competitors were tracked for 4 days in real time. This is 4 days after they left the water and returned home. And this is because organisers failed to turn off a GPS feature on a mobile app that was part of the swim. Now, this blunder was only discovered after Reddit users posted screenshots of the location of swimmers and support crews identified by their race numbers who'd signed up for this tracking app on their smartphones. Now, you know, we had competitors like Cody Simpson, you know, pop star turned swim star in there. So this GPS tracking feature was eventually switched off, but took 4 days.
Wow. So people could see where Cody Simpson was, if you knew what his race number was.
Well, if he'd signed up to the app, knew his race number, that was that. So there's obviously, there are privacy concerns around this, the concerns around the disclosure of real-time data. One swimmer was tracked to the Netherlands after returning home after the swim.
Do we know how it worked? Did it just track their phones?
I think it just tracks their phones. So when you're swimming, so they know where they are.
But swimmers had their phones with them?
Well, they might have had like a waterproof watch thing that's tied to the smartphone.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Because I know a few swimmers who do that sort of thing.
Like I know somebody who was tracking their friend who was swimming in the Roto Swim.
Not dodgy at all.
I think it was very useful because they were trying to time it. So they were at the finish line when their friend arrived and they could say, okay, the friend is now smart. A kilometre away. Okay, we got to get there.
Were they at the pub beforehand, were they? They just walked
pretty
down.
Pretty much. Can you imagine this? It's like you're smashing pints and you don't realise that your friend has already finished. So it's actually quite useful from that perspective, I think. But even more useful if the organisers remember to turn it off. And now there's a stoush that's brewing between the state government and the city of Perth, and it's erupted again.
Yes, this war of words between the city of Perth and the state government, or, you know, Basil Zemplis and the state government, let's face it. So there was a sod turning for the construction of a new pedestrian and cycle bridge across the Swan River, but the Lord Mayor was not invited to the groundbreaking ceremony. Now, on the signage around there is a logo, City of Perth logo, but the Transport Minister, Rita Saffiotti, says, you know, these things, it's like organising a wedding, the invitation list, and, you know, the City of Perth didn't put any money in for it, so therefore no invite. Basil Zemplis says, well, we've put money in for this project and this bridge is part of that wider project. So it's not the first time that Basil Zemplis has been snubbed, and it's thought to originate from the City of Perth not putting money into the Wacker Pool project.
So ever since then, government's got its nose out of joint.
And the state government has refused to say, once this new pedestrian cycle bridge is built, whether Basil Zemplis will be invited to the opening. Or not.
It seems a bit petty.
So childish.
And it's, you know, as much as the state government might say, oh, no, it's protocol and it's like a wedding, you know, there is a way these things happen and certain people get invited for certain reasons. I don't know. It does seem very petty to me.
I just wonder if they don't want the Lord Mayor to overshadow their event.
Yeah, and then you've also got the issue of Baz, and the rumours that maybe he'll join the Liberal Party,
I suppose there's a bit going on in the background. Perhaps don't want to give him too much oxygen then. Yeah. Would they, if it's a potential opponent?
Oh, look, I think it's such a you know, tall mountain to climb if he joined the Liberal Party and to try and, you know, claw them back to relevance. I just think he'd be better to stay as Lord Mayor, I reckon. And now let's talk about the construction industry in Perth, because generous building grants doled out during the pandemic to keep WA's economy ticking over behind the hard border have now been blamed for wreaking havoc on the construction sector. Now, we spoke spoke yesterday about BGC, how they'd stopped taking on new business because of this backlog of builds that just were not getting done. Some people waiting more than 2 years. But now builders have spoken to the West Australian on the condition of anonymity. They've also said that some other factors have played a role here. So the strict commencement time frames that were initially attached to the grants have been a big part of the reason why the industry is now in turmoil. And for those who came in late, so the WA government offered $20,000 building bonus grants, and they announced that just days after the Morrison government revealed $25,000 home builder grants in June 2020. So you had the combination of those two grants plus low interest rates, which caused the whole industry to overheat. And then you had, sort of supply chain issues because of the pandemic, labor shortages, fixed price contracts, and all of this type of stuff going on. So, and that's been a part of the reason why we've seen 94 construction businesses collapse in the last financial year alone.
It's been a perfect storm, hasn't it? But then it's easy in hindsight to say, oh, look what's happened. But how could they forecast that we were going to have inflation issues? And
do you want to know what Premier Mark McGowan has come out and said? So it looks like a complete shit show to everybody
else.
And certainly to the families who are paying rent as well as paying for a mortgage for a house that hasn't been built for 2 years and are absolutely on the brink of ruin. So Premier Mark McGowan has bizarrely claimed that the crisis is a sign of strength and robustness in the state's economy. So he's trying to spin it as a good thing.
Is he taking a leaf out of Communist China's book with that spin?
Oh, my God. He's spinning it pretty hard, that's for sure.
I mean, this is the thing, though. We're hunting around the world to get workers, right?
Yeah.
Where are they all going to live?
Well, you know what? We've got some stats on this as well. So the latest international migration figures reveal the rebound in foreign workers flowing into WA since the border opened last March has been slower than every other state and territory in Australia.
That does not surprise me in the least. Even just
because there's nowhere for them to live.
Just look at backpackers. You don't really see many backpackers around. I was over east, earlier this week, and backpackers everywhere over there.
Yeah, I know, right?
So they obviously haven't come back, and it's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. There's nowhere for them to live. There's some issues at the moment. Nothing compared to the issues in Greece right now. Mm. So this is a shocker. The death toll from a head-on collision between two trains in central Greece is likely to rise, with officials acknowledging that scores of people have yet to be accounted for nearly 24 hours after a crash that left 40 dead and many more injured. So rescue workers have been toiling against the clock to find survivors overnight in what has been one of the worst train crashes Europe has seen in decades. Many of the dead have been students, which is just absolutely heartbreaking. And the bodies have been so badly burned in this crash that relatives have been forced to give DNA samples just to identify them. And so the two trains, one carrying 342 passengers and the other transporting cargo, collided when the passenger train inexplicably changed tracks to the same track as the cargo train. And then they travel along the same track for several kilometres before colliding at high speeds. And from the moment of the crash, the blame has fallen on the station master of the local region who's been detained. And they're saying human error caused the collision. But now also the spotlight is being turned to the state of Greece's railway system. And the Greek transport minister has announced his resignation. And he said the network in Greece, the train network, was so flawed it did not befit the 21st century.
Interesting that he's announced his resignation, because usually in these situations, you don't see that. You see the politician coming in to fix the crisis. No,
it's Greece.
It's different rules.
Yeah, very different. And now let's talk about Cable Beach. So it has been awarded as one of the best beaches in the world.
Yes, third best beach in the world, beating every other beach in Australia. And this is according to TripAdvisor's annual Traveller's Choice Awards. So they've looked at ratings and reviews. Cable Beach only got pipped by two other beaches around the world, Baía do Sancho in Brazil and Eagle Beach in the Caribbean. In terms of other Australian beaches, only one other one cracked the top 25, and that was Manly in Sydney.
Yeah, wow.
So it was interesting.
Obviously, didn't take into account those shark attacks.
Yes.
I'm going to look up. I'm looking up Baía do Sancho.
Yeah, what's it look like?
Oh, look, it looks pretty nice. It's pretty nice, but I wouldn't say it's anything
special.
Oh,
I do. Well, do you know what I like about it? It looks a bit secluded.
Yeah, it's
doesn't
in a
it?
Cove.
Yeah, whereas Cable Beach just stretches on and on and on and on and on.
And I can't even find Eagle Beach in Brazil. How good could it possibly be?
In the Caribbean.
Oh, Eagle in the Caribbean.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Man, that's a problem. Yeah, well, all those Caribbean beaches are pretty nice, aren't they? Let's be honest. You sit there enjoying some sort of rum cocktail. That's part of the attraction, I think.
Now I'm really intrigued about Eagle Beach and looking up that one.
And now,
oh, look, it doesn't look like it's that. Oh, no, it doesn't. Oh, they've got flamingos.
When you're thinking about doing the chores around the house, how do you feel about doing the dishes? Some people love it. Oh, no, no one loves it.
No, but
some people,
love
some people
dishes.
Don't mind it.
Though. No, I just,
some people hate
it. Just try and put them in the dishwasher. The only ones I actually do, as in hand washing, ones that obviously can't go in the dishwasher.
Well, you might want to pay attention to this then, because the choice of dishwashing liquid can make a big difference in how easy it is to wash the dishes. And consumer watchdog Choice has put 44 of the top dishwashing liquids to the test and found that the best performing product was also one of the cheapest, while one of the most expensive brands performed no better than water.
What?
Yes.
Which was that brand?
So I'll tell you. So the products were tested on how well they cut through grease and stains. They had these white tiles that they covered with egg yolk, bolognese sauce, which we know is very hard to get out, and rice starch.
Who's getting egg yolk stuck on their splash bag tiles anyway?
Yeah, I know. Anyway. But instead of a plate, they used these white tiles because they could put the stains on the tiles, put them in the dishwashing solution, and then...
Sounds like a morning TV commercial.
Yeah, I know, right? And then tested them with a spectrophotometer, which is a machine that measures how white something is, and then the tiles were given a score out of 100 based on how effectively the stains were removed. And the top scoring dishwashing liquid with a score of 90% was Kohl's Ultra Advanced Power Soak Lime fragrance. And so that was the clear winner, and it's only 42 cents per 100 mil. So it was one of the cheapest tested.
Okay.
A third
so Kohl's
of the price.
Ultra Wash.
Yeah, Kohl's Ultra Wash. It was a third of the price of the second placed Fairy dishwashing detergent. But the ultimate flop was the Morning Fresh Ultimate Power Clean Spray, which is, these things are a joke. So it's the spray bottles. So it's the laziest thing. You just spray them on the dishes and then give them a wipe, which, you know, I never really thought they would
work. I use Morning Fresh, but the liquid.
The liquid. Liquid
is that
good.
Okay?
Liquid
was
is
that
good.
All right?
It's the spray bottles.
Where did the liquid come in your list?
It did pretty well. Okay. I don't know exactly. Okay. But the spray,
seems to get off the stains.
45% it's only scored. So half as good as the Kohl's brand. And it costs $11 per bottle.
Oh,
there you go. Sport. Now, over in India, Australia have responded following two embarrassing defeats to enjoy a rare day of dominance on the subcontinent and take control of the third test on a ranked turner of a pitch in indoor. The tourists went to stumps on day one at 4 for 156, which is a lead of 47, after Australia's spinners ripped through India during a chaotic opening session. Left-armer Matt Kuhneman, playing in his second test, starred with 5 for 16 as India crumbled for only 109, their fourth lowest total at home against Australia and their shortest innings in terms of balls since 2008. I think at one point they lost 5 for 18,
wow.
So which is the kind of thing that Australia has been doing so far this test series. So there you go. But it doesn't really matter too much. We've already lost the Border Gavaskar
it doesn't
trophy.
Mean much, does
but,
it?
So yeah. But still, getting a win is better than nothing. The Wild West. So I'm bringing you a lot of wild South American stories lately. We had the bloke who shacked up with a 800-year-old mummy yesterday in Peru.
Yeah.
Today it's Bolivia. Yeah, one. Today it's Bolivia. And a Bolivian man has described how he managed to survive for 31 days in the Amazon jungle.
Did he have Anatan, food and water?
Anatan Acosta, who's 30 years old, got separated from his four friends while out hunting in northern Bolivia. He says he drank rainwater. It's a rainforest, so pretty easy to come
that
across.
Makes sense.
That he collected in his shoes. He was doing shoeys of rainwater.
Wow.
He ate worms, insects, but most of the time he spent hiding from jaguars. So he was finally found by a search party made up of locals and friends a month after
how
he'd gone missing.
How do you hide from a jaguar?
Well, you stay very quiet.
Yeah.
He lost seven. A bigger problem apparently were these pig-like mammals. There was like a whole gang of them that chased him around the forest. So yeah. There you go. He lost 17 kilos.
Did he have any special tea while he was out there?
No. He lost 17 kilos, mostly running away from those native pigs. He had a dislocated ankle, and he was severely dehydrated when they found him. He was still able to walk with a limp, and police say they're going to question his four friends to understand how he became separated from
them. Do you think they deliberately separated themselves from him?
Interesting. I don't know. But he, and he said
he's
giving
up hunting.
You ever
had those holidays with friends, and then you realise, actually, I can't holiday with that friend ever again.
Exactly. And that's your news from the West Australian for Thursday, March 2. And don't forget to subscribe to The West Live on your favourite podcast player. Maddie, I'll see you tomorrow.
Friday tomorrow. Have a good one, mate.
You've been listening to The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea. We interrupt this broadcast to apologise to The Amazing Race.
The first destination that you have to get yourself to is Canberra.
All right, well, I'm out.
The Big News Sketch Comedy. We interrupt this broadcast. Tuesday, 7:30 on 7 and 7 Plus.